This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Easing into 2014 with me, your host Richard McCall on Colombia Calling, we have an interview with Vicky Kellaway of Banana Skin Flip Flops. We're talking about our hopes for Colombia in 2014, the launch of her book in March, her first novel. And we're interviewing from Mompox, Colombia. So any ringing in your ears, the sound of crickets in this tropical destination in which I find myself at the moment, don't miss out. Colombia Calling, the Overseas Radio Network, with Vicky Kellaway of Banana Skin Flip Flops.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. Get started today at Podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
It's 2014. This is Columbia Calling. I'm radioing in from Mompox. Welcome back. We're here with new interviewees, new shows. It's going to be more dynamic than ever this year. We're going to really look for the people to interview. And we're going to plow straight in today, you know, rather than reflect on what happened in 2013. That's old news. We talked about that already. We're into more than 30 shows. Columbia Calling has been a hit. Thank you to all of you out there who've been downloading, because I can tell you that I'm getting more than 6,000 downloads per month, which for a tiny niche show here on the Overseas Radio Network, I would like to think that's a success story. So that's a big thank you and a big applause to all of you out there. And please keep tuning in, and we'll keep trying to keep this interesting for all of you. Now today, we've got a former guest back on the show. It's Vicky Kellaway of Banana Skin Flip Flops. So welcome back.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here once again.
Yeah, and this is a special show because we're doing it here in Mompox, in my house on the second floor in the office here in this colonial town. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It must be still in the 30 degrees. And of course, we can't have the fans on because the feedback would be a bother to this recording. So we're sitting here sweating.
We are sweating.
I've got that horrible spackle on my top lip of sweat this evening. And, so New Year's Eve has passed. I know we had a great party here in the plaza in front, the Plaza La Concepción. There was live music, cumbia, mapale, bularengue, all these things that sort of filter along the Magdalena River in Colombia and then head out to Barranquilla. And that's what makes the Barranquilla Carnival. But Vicky came down, and Banana Skin Flip Flops came down and spent time with us here in Mompox. It's been a real pleasure. Vicky, thank you for coming down, and how have you found our town?
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love these parts of Colombia outside of Bogota, because we can so easily sort of forget that Colombia exists, really. Seven countries in one, and Mompox is just another part of that. And it's been fantastic. The people have been great. The atmosphere has been great. It is hot, but it's wonderful and beautiful and so interesting as well. The history of the town, which we've just been discussing, is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, now there's this one interviewee who gets an idea of my madness and my follies down here in Mompox. At some point towards the end of the month, I'll be heading back to Bogota, and you'll hear me sort of whinging about the weather. But you can call me on that when I say it's been so hot these days. But anyway, it's been a wonderful period here in the town, and yeah, you know, people have shown appreciation for the renovations taking place. UNESCO is taking, you know, the Ministry of Culture are investing money, and this town is becoming fashionable. We've had Carlos Vives, the renowned sort of vallenato pop singer, has recorded his latest video here, and some of the locals are in it, and you know, it's putting Mompos on the map. And you know, I'm not a very good capitalist, because I kind of like the way the town is, despite having a hotel here. I don't know what to say.
It's very tempting to think that way, but we have to be so careful in Colombia that towns like Mompos don't become, well, a bit like La Habana in Cuba, in that we appreciate the oldness and the old worldness so much, and then suddenly they're falling to ruins around us, and we've lost all our cultural heritage, really. So obviously there has to be a balance, and we have to preserve things, but we do have to modernize, we do have to repair, we do have to move forward. And it, okay, Mompos at the moment has a few bits of refurbishment going on, but that's exactly how it has to be, because otherwise we're going to lose gems like Mompos, and we just can't allow that to happen, really. So I, for one, am very happy to see the town. Yes, I mean, it's not so much modernizing. Mompos is modern in many ways. It's just making sure that we don't lose the things that are so important to Colombia and for the people that live here, and give them the support that they need to repair the town and to make it look as beautiful as it can be.
This is true, and I think you're right on that. And of course, I come with a different opinion. You know, I have a different background, being English, being from elsewhere. And of course, I like this isolation and the heat and this sort of weird Macondian atmosphere.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, I have to understand that people have lived with this all their lives, without good clinics, without good schools, without infrastructure, and they need it. You know, as taxpaying public,
exactly,
they are, you know, they have a right to, you know, modern, I'm not even going to say luxuries, necessities.
Exactly, and refurbishment doesn't always mean change. Sometimes it just means putting things back to the way they were. For example, repairing river walks. Mm. People have always wanted to walk along rivers and enjoy a nice evening stroll, and that doesn't mean we should just allow a path to fall into disrepair. So I think it's fantastic. And yes, as foreigners, we do like this idea of sort of Aracataca and the forgottenness and Macondo, like you speak about, but really these kind of things are essential, so I'm definitely a pro.
That's good. So you've been here a few days, and now you're heading back to Cartagena and then back to Bogota. But 2013 for you was a watershed year, really. We can say that. You hosted a TED talk.
Yes.
In Bogota. I mean, tell me, I mean, you know, I don't really know what all this is about, but can tell the listeners out there, because they'll be more informed than me on this.
Okay, well, lots of people are big fans of TED, because TED is a forum it's a non-profit organization. It's just a forum to share ideas, and they can be ideas about anything. And what most of us do is log onto the website and watch a TED talk about absolutely anything from nature, science, history, politics, just do average ideas. And we're inspired for sort of 10 minutes, and then we maybe don't think about it anymore, or we share it with our friends on social networks or whatever. But what is a spin-off of TED are these TEDx conferences.
Uh-huh.
And we have one every year in Bogota in December.
Yeah.
And this year was the fourth one, and I was one of 350 people to be nominated to give a talk. And then there was a sort of American Idol style selection process down to the final 10 speakers. And then I was able to give my speech, which was about the benefits of migration, unsurprisingly, and why we should encourage foreign people and make it easier for them and give them visas in every country, in Britain, in Colombia, because only by doing that do we share all the benefits of migration. When you shut your doors is when you start to have problems. So that was the essence of my speech.
Wow. And how did that go down with the crowd?
Yeah, Colombians really enjoyed it. Colombians have a peculiar relationship, I should say, at the moment still with foreigners, in that they've been closed sort of against their will, really, for a long time. You know, the conflict and various sort of reputational things of Colombia have stopped people coming. So Colombians are happy still,
yeah,
at the moment with tourism and to have visitors and see people coming into their country. So they were really pleased. And on the other hand, I spoke about the need to welcome them into countries like Britain. So
yeah,
Colombians at the moment who are struggling to get visas to go and study,
sure,
in Britain appreciate the same. They are educated people. They want to share their experience. They want to go to Britain. They want to pay their fees. Mm-hmm. They want to work, and then they just want to come back to Colombia with what they've learned. And in the meantime, British people gain a huge benefit from that. So it was well received on two levels, if you like.
Okay, well, that sounds incredibly interesting. And now, will you be speaking again next year? I mean, this year, 2014. I mean, you're a big TED fan.
Yeah, I'm a huge TED fan. There are other TED conferences. Of course, that's TEDx Bogota, so I wouldn't speak there again. You know, uh-huh. We need 10 new ideas every year.
Really?
But I'd love to speak at another one. They have them all over the place, so who knows?
And I imagine your family's watched it and downloaded it, and it's just...
Yeah, the official video's not come out yet, because everybody who organises TED is a volunteer, so they do this on top of their work, and they need a little bit of time to edit these videos. They were filmed for 3 cameras, but my family in England were able to watch the live streaming. But of course, they didn't understand a word, because TEDx Bogota is in Spanish.
I was going to ask.
So my mother called me, who doesn't speak a word of Spanish, and said, "You looked very nice," and people laughed. So I'm assuming it went well. Said, "Yes, it went very well. Thank you very much."
As if I want to say something incredibly English, bless.
Oh, bless. Exactly. Actually, my parents have always owned animals and dogs, and their vet is Spanish. Oh. So the vet is always called upon for two reasons: when a dog is ill, or when Vicky does something on the internet that needs translating. So I'm sure he'll be popping around to translate for my parents.
I think that's fantastic. We're talking to Vicky Kellaway of Banana Skin Flip Flops, a very famous blog here about travel and Colombian life in Bogota. It's bananaskinflipflops.com. We'll be right back. Don't go away. This is Colombia Calling.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Okay, you're not stupid. You see the handwriting on the wall. You're thinking about joining the millions of Americans who have already left the country. But where do you go? You don't want to make the mistake of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You need accurate info to make one of the most important decisions of your life. You need EscapeTheUSAnow.com. You don't want to have regrets because your expat country collapsed due to crime, conflict, disease, famine, natural disaster, scarcity, war, or a government gone bad. Only at EscapeTheUSAnow.com will you discover the handful of countries that offer true freedoms and unbelievable opportunities that most people could only dream of. EscapeTheUSAnow.com is the information you cannot afford not to have. Information that took over 30 years to research, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, with more than 250,000 miles traveled. For less than $2.50 per month, you can have what may be the most life-saving information you have ever obtained. EscapeTheUSAnow.com, so you don't jump from the frying pan into the fire.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.justlanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's justlanded.com.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house? Find a job? Find a doctor? Start a business? Invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at colombia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
And we're back. For those of you just tuning in, this is Colombia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network. I'm Richard McCall. I'm here with Vicky Kellaway of Britain, the author of Banana Skin Flip Flops. That's bananaskinflipflops.com. Check her out on Twitter, on all the various social media that we're all plugged into that has made life a long string of passwords. Anyway, we're here in Mompos. And Mompos, six hours south of Cartagena, along the Magdalena River, one of the most important rivers in Colombia, that really created the country through its trade along this waterway. Anyway, Mompos is a small colonial city. 7,000 people live in the colonial center itself, and about 40,000 in the sort of splay that then grows out from the center. Anyway, Vicky, Banana Skin Flip-Flops in person came to Montboss, and she spent New Year's Eve with us, and so she's taking some time off and relaxing here in the sweltering heat. And we've been talking to her about, you know, New Year's Eve and the live music that we listened to. And of course, she had a watershed year in 2013. She got to fulfill that dream of the TEDx talk. And of course, as we heard in the first segment, it will be her parents' vet who will be translating the speech from Spanish to English. We all get together. There's a few of us who get together in Bogota. So many of us who have been on the show, on the Columbia Calling, so myself, I get together, we know you, Vicky, and also Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics, right, who's been on the show a couple of times as well, and Caroline Doherty de Novoa, I mean, it's a mouthful of a name, who is the published author, Dancing with
Statues.
Oops, sorry, Dancing with Statues, Rainbow Nelson of thisiscartagena.com, and Tara Days, and we're all a sort of expat group of struggling writers. And we get together, so I'm hoping to have a summit here, like an annual general meeting here.
Fantastic.
In Montboss at some point, where we can all get together. But we get together to sort of encourage one another.
Definitely.
To keep writing. And I found it, as a wannabe author, I mean proper, you know, I want to have a book written, and anyone who's listened to this show or read my blogs will know that I've been writing the Montboss Project. Vicky as well is writing A Comedy of Errors about mm-hmm. her life in Colombia, mm-hmm. Bogota, and it will be a somewhat animated and literary version.
That's right, yes, co-written with an artist.
Fantastic. And so basically, we encourage one another to write, and it's all about, we were called the Struggling Writers Group until I objected, thinking that was already too negative. And of course, Caroline was published, so that she can't be struggling. So I like to say we're the group of 13, down to being from the year of 2013, when we all finally got together, based on the fact that the group of the 1927 poets in Spain, Cernuda, Salinas, Lorca, but maybe that's a bit pretentious, but anyway, a bit geeky, and to liken ourselves, relatively unpublished people, to such greats.
No.
But anyway, so, I mean, you're writing this book, The Comedy of Errors, and we're all in this group, and has this helped you go forward? I mean, is this
Definitely.
What we can say to want to be writers out there as well?
Definitely. I mean, two things have helped me with the book. First of all, co-writing it is really helpful. And second of all, being in a book like a group like the Group of 13. And that's because finishing a book is not so much a battle against what you're writing or the content or the research or all of the other practical things you have to do. It's a fight against yourself. It's a fight against procrastination. It's a fight against that belief that actually what you're writing is terrible and is completely pointless and is going to be the worst book of all time. And you really get these fears, and they're enough to make you put down the pen and say, no, abandon, I'll start a new project in 2 or 3 months. And what you need is other people around you who are experiencing the same things to say, take a deep breath. Okay, so it's terrible, but finish it.
Yeah.
And go back and edit, and if there are bits you don't like, edit, but finish the book. And I think that's what's been great for all of us in the group of 13, is being able to say, oh, okay, I'm frightened about this, or I'm worried about this, or I've only written this and I play on Twitter all the time. And now we're able to say to each other, well, hang on, how are you doing with the Montboss Project? And how many words have you written? Because unfortunately, it is a bit of a numbers game. You do have to write words to publish a book. So I think all of us in our own way have found it really helpful. Caroline's on to her second novel, so she's able to bring all the experience from the first one.
Yeah.
All of our books are influenced by Colombia, our experiences. We all love the country deeply. We're all Colombia nerds, really. I mean, I speak to Colombians who've grown up here and been to school here, who know less about Colombian history than we do, who know less about immediate history, who know less about past history, who've studied the culture less. And okay, that's natural, because we chose Colombia, and Colombians didn't, really. So I think it's a fantastic thing, and I really encourage people, if they're doing creative ventures, it's not a market where a winner takes all. You read one book 1 week and you read another book the next week. So people need to put these sort of outdated ideas of competitiveness behind them and see that all centers of creative energy attract lots of people. You look at Silicon Valley now, you look at the philosophers in Athens, you look at painters in the Renaissance. Why were they all doing the same thing at the same time to a high level of success? They were doing it because they were all together. They were able to steal ideas from each other, inspire each other, have the same patrons in some circumstances. They moved to certain places to be closer to what they love to do. So I really do think if you're going to embark on anything, don't do it alone. You don't need to. It's not that kind of business, especially not with writing. So, yeah, it's been a fantastic year.
It's been fun, isn't it?
It's been fun. Really fun.
And I reflect on it, and I think, you know, really, if I hadn't have sat down with you guys and had them sort of actually opened up a little bit. Obviously, we're all a bit cagey. It's like, oh God, not about the competition, but it's like, really, do I have to share? It's kind of like giving that school presentation, but you're not sure if I've quite done it right. You know, or are my flies open if I'm in front of a big crowd? It's that sort of worry.
It is a bit like that, isn't it?
You know,
it's painful. Yeah. Sharing things can be painful. You have fear of ridicule, exactly as you say.
But as I like what you say, so we picked Colombia. We're Colombia nerds. Of course, Colombians didn't. You know, they ended up being born here, but yes, we are Colombia nerds, and that is the common theme with all of us. We're here, we've chosen to be here, and it's our inspiration.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, without Colombia, without Montboss, because my book is The Montboss Project,
exactly,
there wouldn't be a book.
Exactly. That's my book is called Colombia, A Comedy of Errors.
Yeah.
How could you write a book called Colombia, A Comedy of Errors without being in love with Colombia? But it's true, that's a great thing that binds all of us.
So, and now, in the last interview, we mentioned it briefly.
Yes.
You broke the news that you were doing the book and you would be published. And apologies for that. Anyway, you broke the news that you're going to be published. And so when do you think the book will be out?
We're looking at March at the moment. And the reason behind that is because the Bogota Book Fair will be in April. It's such a fantastic, such a prestigious event that we want the book to be ready. But the funny thing about books is it's so hard. They're a bit like babies or something. You just don't want to quite deliver it in some way, you know, and you've got that fear. So it's been hard to finish it because ultimately it's not been a business venture. They are business ventures by their very nature, but the trouble is you just want it to be the perfect book. So at some point we're just going to have to draw the line in the sand and say, this is the perfect book for us, mm-hmm. and I'm very much hoping it'll be March.
Okay, fantastic. Well, here at Colombia Calling, of course, we are supporting you wholeheartedly on this adventure. And of course, if you are launching at the Bogota Book Fair, which is usually in March,
April time.
We will be there with bells on.
Filling
the numbers and also spreading the word there, talking to anyone we see. We always run into people who've been in the Casa Maria there, so of course we'll be talking about your book and how people should be buying it, of course, you know.
But the Bogota Book Fair is such a highlight, I think, in the year, in the city, really. I mean, it sort of backs up that kind of old title we used to have of the Athens of Latin America, you know. So I think whatever happens will be fun, and that's why I want the book to be ready.
Okay, fantastic. Well, it's fantastic, and we wish you all the luck with that. And of course, it's just a massive undertaking, this book, A Comedy of Errors, and working with someone.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be tough too.
Yes, but ultimately I would say it's been helpful.
Okay.
Because like I say, it fights off the fear that what you're writing is terrible because you've got someone else to say, don't worry, it's good.
It's good.
And you know you've got someone else who's got your back as well. So it's not like you have to go out in the big bad world and defend this book you've written about a country that's not your own.
Yeah.
Sergio is Colombian. Mm-hmm. So for me it's been fantastic to be able to say, okay, this is what I feel about Colombia, this is the research, the love I've put into it as a foreigner, but Sergio is Colombian. So let's get that out of the way right at the beginning. This is not a book about Colombia just written by a foreigner.
Yeah.
We've written it very much together. And through debate, the most beautiful ideas are born, I think. And sometimes we fight a little bit, we bicker, we change our minds. And because of that, I think we'll have a stronger book. But it's definitely been an interesting experience.
I'm sure it has. Now, tell me a second. Are there any chapters in this book that have been proper sources of contention between the two of you?
What is always a source of contention in Colombia? That's how much you talk about the violence. Exactly. And Sergio was adamant from the beginning that he didn't want a book about Colombia that was just like every other book about Colombia and spoke about the violence. And I didn't want that either. You know, yeah. I love Bogota, the city I live in. I love Colombia, the country I live in. And I'm, like everyone else, was tired of this reputation that we had to push. But at the same time, you can't write a book about Colombia that doesn't mention the violence. So we did what all brave, valiant people do, and we left it till the end. So we wrote four beautiful chapters, and fantastic. They came together, the history, the culture, economics, the people of Colombia. Fantastic, vivid chapters. And then we got to chapter 5, which is justice, and we said, how are we going to tackle the violence? Sergio has had very personal experiences with the violence. More so in many ways than many Colombians that I know. And that's been a good thing and a bad thing because, of course, you have to bring personal experience into it. And he's actually a very balanced person. So he sort of said, I don't want to bring myself into this, but it's an intimately personal book for both of us.
Sure.
So I wouldn't say it's been a contention. We're both quite good-natured people who just want to write a really beautiful book, so we've always been united in that. But that probably was the area where we've had the most debate. And that is the part that we're still finalising at the moment. But throughout everything, we always said, it doesn't matter what happens, I'm confident this is going to be a fantastic book.
Excellent.
So I think we're just inching ourselves towards the end.
Really. Very positive. Very positive indeed. So we're talking to Vicky Galloway of bananaskinflipflops.com. Keep an eye out on this website, because I'm sure she'll be putting updates on there for the
Absolutely.
Book launch, or the the Life of the Columbia Comedy of Errors, all the time. And so, we're going to come back to this in the next segment of the show. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. And don't go away.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. It seems almost silly to ask, but if you're going to be living abroad, why wouldn't you want to learn the language? Do you want to make life more difficult for yourself? If you're going to the time, expense, and risk of living abroad, give yourself the best chance for success by actually being able to communicate with your new neighbors, at least on some level of proficiency. A recent article in Escape from America magazine caught our attention. In it, writer Paul Allen wrote about his experience at a conference in Vienna, attended by folks from all over Europe and the Middle East. Allen was amazed at the level of English skill exhibited by attendees who were using it as their second or even third language. Yes, English is still the language of business, but that sentiment is not going to do you much good when you're trying to buy a bar of soap in Managua. Don't be the ugly American who thinks the rest of the world should bend to your accident of birth. Allen went on to quote a 2005 European Commission study, which reported that the following percent of adults in these countries were able to converse in English. Sweden, 85%, Denmark, 83%, Netherlands, 79%, and Luxembourg, 66%. Add to these amazingly high numbers that over 50% speak English in Finland, Slovenia, Austria, Belgium, and Germany. Kind of makes us look inadequate, huh? A Dutch friend who Allen spoke with told him that she believes that American television had a great influence, since the shows run with Dutch subtitles rather than being dubbed. A last tidbit for you. English is the third most spoken language in the world, after Mandarin Chinese and Spanish. Americans planning on living abroad in a Central American country, take heed. They speak Spanish there. For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Mompos with the famous banana skin flip-flops, Vicky Galloway. We've been talking about her book. And of course, this is a big deal, writing a book. Nothing short-term about this. You're writing yourself into the annals of Colombian history. And hopefully, and I know it will be well-received by the locals. And so what we were saying previously, just before we went to the break, is that Vicky's plan is to launch this for the Bogota Book Fair, which is a huge event. I mean, second only, I think, to the Guadalajara Book Fair when we're talking about Latin America. And boy, Colombia is an incredibly well-read country. Literary people. You can go to any town anywhere, and they will be aware of Gabriel García Márquez and other authors. But anyway, so this is, I think it's a perfect opportunity. Have you looked into how you get into that? The technicalities of holding a book launch at the book fair. I'm sorry, it's just a technical question.
No, I am very, very fortunate in that this may be my first book, but it's actually Sergio's fourth book.
So he's
very experienced in all those kind of things. But I find it difficult for people who are writers to suddenly know how the world of publicity works and how all the technicalities of those things work.
Yeah.
And that's another very positive aspect of the Group of 13.
Yeah.
Because we're able to share information. We're not publicists.
No.
We don't sell things. That's not what we do. We just sit down at a typewriter and we write words to reflect what we see and what we remember. And suddenly it comes this big bad world of commercialism. So Sergio is very good at doing all that stuff.
So fortunately you've got a very key member of the team who's already very plugged in. Well, I'm glad to hear it, because I wouldn't know the first thing.
Well,
I was like,
We do have one advantage, though, you and I particularly, in our journalism backgrounds.
Yeah.
So we think we know nothing, but actually we have a very, very intimate understanding of how the world of publicity does work from a newspaper perspective.
Sure.
So I know that journalists get harassed, I know they get bothered, I know what a story is to them, I know how quick you have to be. So those kind of things I do bring to discussion, but business-wise, thank goodness I have Zephyr.
That's fantastic. And then you can give up the day job and just be a lady that lunches.
Well, to be honest, the project's worked a lot better than both of us. We entered into it in a very sort of vague way as well. Neither of us said, this is the book we want to write. We began writing what we thought and we modified, and then after a while we said, well, these could be chapters and these could be areas, and the whole thing came together so organically and with so much love and passion, really. And we've been writing it since April. We've worked extremely hard. I don't think this will be our last project together.
Touch wood.
Just have to see how it goes, and who knows where life takes you, but it's been fantastic.
Now, and the text of this is independent of the banana skin flip-flops text?
Absolutely.
You're not cannibalizing text?
Not at all, and okay. I really want to make the distinction there, actually, because not every reader of Banana Skin Flip-Flops is going to like this book. Mm-hmm. This is a book about Columbia. Banana Skin Flip-Flops is a blog about my life, so I can be funny, and I can tell, you know, whatever happens in the day, and it's all very candy floss, whereas Columbia, A Comedy of Errors does challenge some difficult topics, which I never challenge in my blog. So I'll say to people, please read the book, tell me what you think, I can't wait, I love feedback, I'm used to it as a journalist, good and bad, you know, I'm really relaxed about that kind of thing. But remember, you enjoy Banana Skin Flip-Flops because that's my personal life, and you guys are my friends and my readers and people who write to me through that, and I love it. But my professional life is journalism and writing books, hopefully, and that's what Columbia, A Comedy of Errors is. So it's going to be interesting to see if the audience differs or if they're going to be the same sort of people. I can't wait.
Give us a little bit more, Daisy, if you can,
of
a
course.
Few more tidbits of information about, you said it's 5 chapters.
Absolutely.
Can you name the chapters?
Yes, of course I can. Okay, so first of all, there's a history of Columbia. And then we have people, so we look at the different types of people we have. So, for example, we looked at costeños and pastusos, and then we looked at famous Colombians. And then we looked, there's an interesting section that at the moment is called Forgotten Colombians.
Okay.
And we look at the experiences of black Colombians, disabled Colombians, indigenous Colombians, gay Colombians. And so those are the parts of the book that may raise a few eyebrows, or people may have differing opinions, but the point is to start a debate.
Yeah.
And Colombia can be a very conservative country, I know, because I'm a conservative person. I don't always like to start arguments or debates. I'm quite calm. And that's why I fit in well in Bogota, which is a particularly conservative city. But things only change, modify, progress, or we confirm that we like them if we talk about them.
Yep.
So that's really the aim of the book.
Okay.
Then there's a look at Colombian culture, which is probably the most banana skin flip-flops-esque area, because that's sort of my specialism, if you can call it that. And then Colombianomics,
and so the economics.
So he always an economist by trade.
Uh-huh.
So I guess that's his baby, if culture is perhaps more mine. And then finally, justice.
Justice,
which you could argue is the outcome of all the chapters that precede it.
Yeah.
So I guess we weren't just being cowardly when we left it till last. Maybe there was method in the madness.
Oh, that's, I mean, but it's pretty complete.
I hope so. I mean, no book is ever complete, but I just want to sort of, my personal view, and Sergio may think differently, is just to niggle people a bit and say, are we happy with what we have?
Mm-hmm.
What do we celebrate? What do we look to change? How inclusive are we? What do some people in our society think and others disagree with? All told with cartoons, because Sergio is a cartoonist. And the book is very much a cartoon book. You know, the two things, the text and the cartoons, walk very much hand in hand.
It sounds. I mean, I've seen some of the what do you call them? The
proofs. I guess.
Yeah. I guess I've seen some. It looks very cool. I've seen that. I saw the sketch of Simon Bolivar. Of course, he has to be there.
Of course. And there are some things that you can say better with cartoons.
Okay. I'm hoping there's no. I'm sure. Okay. So we're talking about a little bit about violence and the. Colombians, of course, are very touchy about it. Have you had to touch on Pablo Escobar?
He is mentioned in the book.
He is mentioned.
Because it's very difficult to write a book about Colombia and not mention him. But I will tell you, there's probably more on Sofia Vergara than there is on Pablo Escobar. So by no means. And it's an unfortunate thing, you know. If you look at it percentage-wise, probably what we will end up publishing about the violence and people like him is very small compared to things like Giving Papaya and the Shadow Economy and Shakira. But sometimes people only choose to remember the bad things. We have no control over that as authors, unfortunately.
It's one of those things that fascinates me, because how times change. If we can have these buxom young ladies like Sofia Vergara, you know, winning the awards up there in Hollywood and being a household, an international household name, this could be turning the corner. You know, I don't like what they call farandula. I don't follow that sort of stuff. Farandula is, you know, so the social pages, let's say, you know, just who went to what
party.
You don't
have a good history with that, Richard. Yeah, we all know.
We all know my problems with that. For those of you who weren't aware, I had a very short-term job on the social pages of the Daily Telegraph back in England, of which I walked out on.
A more unlikely journalist for that job, you cannot imagine.
we'll just sidetrack and digress into this so that those of you out there listening can have a little laugh at my expense. I had to interview and go out there to nightclubs on occasion and interview the people that came third in Big Brother, and then go out with the specific plan of insulting Simon Le Bon of Duran Duran, you know. And I was like, I didn't really want to do that. So I couldn't think of anything else than just tell him he was fat. Just go up to someone who I had to listen to as a kid, you know, one of my babysitters or something. We listened to Duran Duran all the time. So I remember this song. I said, "Oh, Simon, you're looking fat." You know, and that's not what I did a master's in journalism to do. Of course, apparently it was something that was going to lead to something else. But
they always say that.
2 weeks after I had a failed interview with Heather Graham, and she was really drunk at the time, that was when I walked out, and I was like, "Yeah, that's it." And maybe that's set me back, but now I'm here and I'm where I want to be.
It worked out well in the end, exactly.
So anyway, that's farandula. So that, there you go, in a nutshell.
But I think the point you were trying to make is maybe we're going to reach a point where people say Colombia and people respond with Shakira instead of Pablo Escobar.
I think so.
And actually, I'm a bit of a fan of Shakira. I like the music, but I also think she's a young woman who does an incredible amount for education in this country and abroad. She's spoken at Oxford University. She has spoken on various things initiated by President Obama. So as role models go, we're definitely moving in the right direction.
I think that's right. I think it's actually true. And on this whole topic, though, I mean, because, you know, I think that we need to clarify something. Pablo Escobar is the most widely publicized of all of these. But there were many of these guys. There were not, it's not just one.
Yeah, but you know, every country has them, okay? Yeah. Obviously, we're talking on levels. But you say England to people and they say the Beatles.
Hooligans.
You know, oh no, do they know?
Yeah.
And I just think all of us really want to do is get to a point where the population of this country is recognized for something other than figures like that, who have been dead a very long time. 10 years this year, I think it was.
In this area, we had a narco called El Alacrán, the scorpion, in Mompox. Okay. There's an island out there in the middle of the swamps, which has a jacuzzi and a swimming pool, a couple of pool tables, two bars, and a fridge that's big enough to live in.
I think I did see that today. Yeah. But if people ask me about Mompox, I'm not going to respond with, oh yeah, there was some narco called the scorpion. The naturaleza, the nature, the birds, the animals that I saw here topped anything that I saw in the Amazon, indeed, anywhere else in the world.
There
I was absolutely overwhelmed today. The Magdalena River for me has always had a bit of a special thing because I'm a bit of a Garcia Marquez fan. Mm. So I've always thought of it as like this sort of magic river that this sort of great maestro sailed down, and he said he knew every inch of it. And going out there today on that boat and seeing eagles and all these other birds and iguanas, I probably saw 50 iguanas in the trees and kingfishers and everything, which is fantastic. So that's what I shall say when people ask me about Mompox.
That's fantastic. I'm going to share an anecdote from a guest who came through to the Casa Maria, I think over a year ago now, and the gentleman was in his 70s and he had been suffering from Parkinson's. He was Colombian and he was making his second trip back after having come through aged 14 when he ran away from home in his summer holidays in the Norte de Santander province with his best friend, and they wanted to go and see the ocean. They'd never seen the sea, you know, so they ran away to go to Cartagena. It took them a couple of months to get there, but we're talking about the 1950s when there was still a naivety in Colombia as well, you know, and they were able to sort of hitch rides on the paddle boats that came up the river.
Brilliant.
You know, and he told me this story and related it, and he gets to Cartagena, and he gets to where is the conference center, which used to be the old market there.
Yeah.
Just this bustling area of filth, about which Garcia Marquez writes in a lot of his documentation. Anyway, the bustling area, and he sees this stinking water that's lapping the edge there, and he says, "This isn't what I came for." And he starts to cry. He's telling me. Anyway, the policeman goes, "Well, you know," policeman approaches him and says, "Why are you crying?" And he goes, "Well, you know, I wanted to come and see the ocean. I have this image in my mind of this beautiful thing." And the policeman went, "No, go running down that street. You know, go down there."
Anyway, the other side of the old city.
Yeah, he ran out. Anyway, he got to it. Anyway, but the long and short of it is, He ran away from home. He did this. This guy's now a judge. You know, this is not someone who's, you know, some sort of idiot. But and then he had to work on the beach collecting shells to sell to tourists to make money to get back. And he got back thinking
that's where it all began.
Yeah, that's where it all began. But he got back thinking that his parents would really and the town would receive them like a returning heroes. You know, oh, the hiding. He said the hiding he received. But anyway, that's the Magdalena River and the legends and the stories and the images that it invokes in the Colombian psyche. Is like to sit down and talk to a gentleman who's like who travelled along it in the paddle steamers, you know.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, almost, you know, people with Huckleberry Finn, New Orleans, the Mississippi River, but this is our Colombian version.
Absolutely,
you know,
but there's something special about rivers, isn't there? Because people who go to India were so excited when they see the Ganges for the first time. There's something for all of us about the time the Thames froze over and people were able to skate from one side to the other. The Magdalena is something so special and so much a part of a Colombia that I think if you are foreign and if it, or you are Colombian, is something everyone has to do. And at the moment, it will not disappoint. The level of the nature that is there, for me, was frankly astounding. It was so beautiful. I'm so happy I went to there.
Fantastic. We're talking to Vicky Kellaway. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control healthcare, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Searching for freedom? The sustainable community in Chile is found at FreedomOrchard.com. Quiet, peaceful, and pristine are some of Freedom Orchard's outstanding features. Freedom Orchard offers recreational activities, organic farming, and self-sufficiency for water and electricity. Well-known Chile expert, free market economist, and radio host of Red Hot Chile, Dr. John Coben, is heading a team of developers, organic farmers, and seasoned professionals to make Freedom Orchard a reality. FreedomOrchard.com, for when you're serious about your freedom.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. We're here on the Overseas Radio Network, and we're here with Vicky Kellaway of Banana Skin Flip Flops, bananaskinflipflops.com. She's on Twitter, Facebook, blogs, etc. She'll have a book coming out in March of 2014, A Comedy of Errors, all about life and history in Colombia. But, you know, check it out. Keep up to date on the social media, and I'm sure it won't disappoint. We've been talking about it. We've been talking about life. We've been talking about her TEDx talk in Bogota. In Spanish, I mean, how cool is that? And we've been talking about our writing group and our hopes, but we're going to talk a little bit about, not only about our hopes for 2014, as this is the inaugural show for the Colombia Calling for 2014. We want to talk about 2014 in Colombia as well. I mean, later on in the year, I'll get other experts on, but I'm here now in Mompos with Vicky, so we're going to talk about what 2014 means for us and Colombia. And so, Vicky, tell me a little bit. First of all, let's go through your hopes for 2014, and then we'll go into Colombia's.
Okay, well, 2013, you said it was a watershed year for me, but really it just felt like a year of incredibly hard work. I started the book in April. I'd always had another book ticking along. I've continued blogging. And apart from the TED Talk, I really just felt like I was running on a treadmill the whole year. But they say that hard work has to go somewhere. So I'm really hoping that 2014 for me is a year when I start to see the outcomes and the results of all the work I put in the year that's just gone. And a few little successes like publishing the book, maybe a second book, who knows? But that's what I really want from this year, just to start seeing some of the fruits of that labour.
But you're travelling as well this year?
I am going to Asia. Yeah, and this is the first time in 4 years that I will have travelled outside Latin America, because I really love Latin America, but I feel so accustomed to things here that a lot of the benefits of travel, the shock, the surprise, the appreciation, I sometimes lose. Never in Colombia. I was astounded by the river today, but I was in El Salvador, for example, and somebody got on the bus with a budgie on her shoulder, and the Australians, I think it was, that I was with, said, "Wow, that never happened." And I thought, "Oh yeah, that sort of stuff happens all the time in Colombia." So this year I've decided to visit Burma, because I thought it would be a really interesting, especially as a Briton, especially with their recent history, to see everything that's happening there. So I will be out of the country in February, but apart from that, we shall see.
So check out for updates on the blog about Burma?
Yes, I'm a really weird one when I travel. So we shall see. I didn't write almost anything in Central America. I only write on the blog when I feel inspired.
Of course.
And for some reason, I can feel inspired by a very average Bogota day and write what I consider to be a really nice blog, and then I can travel to the most beautiful place on earth and have nothing to write about it, because I'm not a travel writer. I write anecdotes and culture. So we shall see. No promises. And maybe the people who read my blog don't want to know about Burma anyway. They like the Colombia stuff, so we're going to see.
I'm sure at some point the experiences garnered in Burma will then be affected into a Colombia blog.
Yes, exactly. That's what normally happens. Rather than trying to write about something, I almost store it away and then it comes out later in an anecdote or something triggers something. So that's what I think is the benefit of travel. All those experiences, you at the time you don't appreciate their value. It's only afterwards that you, as Steve Jobs said, you join the dots and things start to make a bit of sense.
I think that's the first Steve Jobs quote we've had on the show, just so you know.
I was a bit of a fan.
All right. Well, I'm going to Brazil later in the year. This is my first travel for a long time, in truth, and I'm looking forward to this immensely. But it was the other day that something popped up. I was here in Mompox walking along, and they're doing the renovations of the Riverside Walk and the plaza in front of my hotel, and I could see that there are archaeologists, you know, excavating in front, and, you know, the dusting and stuff. And I always feel like a bit part member of an Indiana Jones film. I've always harbored this desire to kind of be Indiana Jones.
You are a bit Indiana Jones.
I've always harbored this desire. Anyway, and they invited me in to check out what they're digging on. And there's all these parts of, you know, fragments of bone, pre-Columbian bone, and then also the ceramics and so on. But the archaeologist, she asked me, she said, "Well, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, no, I've got the hotel and I write, and you know." And she went, "But you travel?" And I said, "I do travel, but, you know," I said, "nothing surprises me anymore." She went, "Yes, yes, and no. You've lost momentarily the opportunity to be surprised, but it will come back."
Yeah,
so
definitely.
There you go. That's
we're
the
all,
Burma
I
thing.
I think we're all, when we travel, we're all sort of seeking to be surprised, aren't we? And those are the sort of rich cultural moments. Wow, these people don't put jam in the fridge.
They don't put jam in the fridge.
You know what I mean, though? Those kind of little moments. That's what we all look for.
Okay, don't put jam in the
Sorry
fridge.
Sorry about my jam in the fridge.
That's all right. Well, what I mean, now those might, and of course, I hope to have the book written, at least the first draft, and be looking for editors. So those of you out there, This is a call for an editor out there, okay?
But this is that thing that, actually, we're going back to the group of 13 that we don't really understand. We're all focused on finishing our books.
Yeah.
But we don't really know who's going to publish them. But the greatness is, at the moment, with everybody having Kindles, if no one has the sense to publish them, we publish them ourselves, we keep all the profits, and then maybe someone picks them up later. But you're cracking on a pace with the Mompos project, aren't you?
36,000 words. 36,000 words.
Book.
Anyway, but let's talk about Colombia. We're coming into the very final end of the show. You've got a few more minutes to talk about Colombia. We're coming, 2014 is an election year.
Yes.
Very pivotal election year. I mean, well, Colombia is always going to be pivotal in truth, you know, politics here. We've got the peace dialogues, because we don't want to say peace anything else, but the peace dialogues between the FARC guerrillas and the Colombian government are set to continue fairly shortly, I should think around the 15th of January, something like that, you know, to reinitiate. They've got a couple of points they need to talk about. I mean, we can only hope for the best. I mean, we've got to have our fingers crossed, right?
We always have to hope for the best in this country. We always have to hope for progress. We always have to hope for anything that, you know, puts an end to sort of senseless killings, if we can use that term. But what I find really interesting is how jaded the average Colombian can be by these processes. I mean, they've heard their grandparents speak about violence. They've heard their great-grandparents speak about it, their parents. So when it comes to a group of people in Havana and in other parts of the world, whenever they sort of come together, the average Colombian can be a bit like, "Oh, tell me when it's over," or "Oh," and even the sort of skepticism about an end result. So, and I do tend to sort of identify with that, really. So I just think that all we can do as Colombians and adopted Colombians is keep working, keep going ahead with our projects, keep trying to improve the things that affect our lives and the people around us and on a broader scale, and just let those guys get on with whatever it is they're going to get on with and wait and see what happens. Because I think hope in this country is a very strange concept.
I think so. I think I think you're very, very right. I think you've hit the nail on the head in that one. I say, "Oh, they're in peace talks in Havana. Isn't that great?" Yeah, if they can agree something, you know, that's the kind of reaction
you
get. Or if
an agreement means what it's supposed to mean. I mean, we've got lots of examples in Colombian history of great things supposedly happening and then just continuing as before with different names.
This is the big problem.
And that does create skepticism. And Colombians are not, generally don't have a lot of faith and trust in society at large. So they prefer to concentrate on themselves, worry about themselves and their families, and keep going that way. I hope things change and they are able to get more trust in their big organisations, but I don't really blame them for not having a whole lot of faith.
I mean, we see the political class and the let's say that the chicanery that they get up to, that doesn't inspire confidence.
No, those kind of things never inspire. The only way to inspire trust in people is to make them believe that you're working in their best interests. And until they believe that, they are never going to trust you. And I think the average Colombian never thinks anyone outside of their family and friends is doing anything in their best interests.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you talk to any Colombians, what is the issue that is most affecting Colombia, and they'll say corruption.
Yes, exactly.
They won't say violence, they'll say corruption.
And corruption is what erodes trust more than anything else. Because if you don't have any faith that you're paying your taxes to some better ends, then why on earth do you want to pay them? You know, all you do, if you don't have faith that you can be a victim of crime and the police are going to help you and sort out that problem and maybe bring justice or ensure your safety in the first place, then what is the point of anything? So hopefully what this process more than anything can bring is just a bit of trust back to the average Colombian that there is something beyond them looking after them, because that's what we all expect from our state.
Interesting side point on that about the trust and the public institutions. This Christmas passed, for the first time they brought in the drink driving laws here in Colombia, which had never existed. You know, they could pull you over, etc., etc., say that you couldn't drive. But now they're bringing in huge fines and taking away people's licenses, which is something that we've all been screaming out for, because the levels of drunk driving of any day of the week, but of a weekend, and accidents, we're talking regular drivers, we're talking taxi drivers, we're talking bus drivers, we're talking Transmilenio drivers, everything, everyone did it. What was my reaction when I talked to my father-in-law? I remember saying how great that they were going to be doing something of this nature, and he went, "Well, yeah, if you can find a policeman who's not corrupt to receive some money
exactly.
and get the guy, you know."
But this is that thing of gently teasing away that idea that it's only you that can be responsible for your safety. So the idea in this country is, if you see a car coming and anything about it makes you think that the driver might be drunk, or just the fact that the time of night or anything, it's Christmas, don't cross the road.
Yeah.
Because it's your responsibility, not the fact that that guy's drunk loads of alcohol, but it's your responsibility that he doesn't hit you. And I think at some point we have to retain that personal responsibility, but also move it a little bit, give it a bit of a nudge and say, actually, that guy shouldn't be driving drunk. Mm. So you should be able to cross the road in a safe manner without being hit by a guy who can't see you because he can't see an inch in front of his face. So those are the kind of interesting things. I don't want to progress Colombia out of existence. I think it's a beautiful country, but those are the gentle changes that I welcome. I think it's going to be a good development.
Nudges in the right direction. Talking about Bogota, because we are Bogota centric, although we're in Mompos because we live in Bogota. We are Bogotanos. We live around the corner from one another there in Chapinero, the greatest place in the city. But now we have all this issue about the mayor who are being destituted. Oh. I haven't had the opportunity to talk about this.
You've opened a can of worms there, Richard. My goodness.
You know, so the mayor, we've got this left-wing former guerrilla, the M19 guerrilla, de Gustavo Petro, who's been kicked out for supposedly, endangering Bogotano's health by trying to reform the mafia of the waste refuse collection people, by an ultra-conservative attorney general who seems to have more power than the president himself. So I guess you can tell where I sit.
Good on you for stating your opinion, because I'm afraid to say I'm going to do exactly the opposite, because I'm always balanced and always very wary of my role as a foreigner in these situations. But what I do love about this, and what I really hope from our book as well, it makes people think, and it makes people talk, and it makes people act. If they're not happy with the situation with the mayor, it's their responsibility as citizens to say something about it.
Yes.
We're not talking violence. We're not talking about things that go beyond your duty as a citizen. We're talking about democracy. And democracy is caring, taking note and saying something. So if one good thing has come out of the mayor debacle, is that Colombians have looked at the system they have, and it's really their responsibility to decide if it serves their best interests. Because that's the point of democracy, that we choose something that serves all of us, that goes beyond our little selfish desires and guards over society. So I'm not going to profess an opinion one way or another on the departure of our mayor, but I'm always happy when people actually stop watching Colombian Idol and put down their Farandula magazine and say, you know what, this politics stuff kind of affects me. Am I happy with it or not? And if you're not happy, speak up. So I was actually heartened to see the protests. I think it's fantastic when people get out there and care about their country.
There needs to be debate. And the debate has gone further than just the capital. The country is debating
this.
We're
a country.
Issue.
Yeah. Actually, Bogota suffers from this a lot. I think we get this kind of locked-in syndrome caused by the mountains, where we think Bogota is our country.
Why did the Spanish put Bogota up there? I mean, come on.
We have to remember that we have to have something that represents everybody. People in Chocó have to be benefiting as much as the people in Llanos, as much as the people in Cartagena, as much as the people in Bogota. And the moment we forget that, suddenly we have problems in the countryside.
Suddenly we've had
with our problems in the countryside. But I think that it's a nice little shake-up for us in Bogota to remember that we're not in some little citadel, we're not in some ivory tower, we're part of a whole nation. Varied, diverse nation that has some problems in some areas that need to be resolved.
This is Vicky Kellingway telling us as it is.
Being balanced, as always.
Well, listen, we've come to the end of the show, so thank you, Vicky, for being here in Mompos with us, here in the sweltering studio.
Lovely studio.
The second floor of my colonial house.
In the plaza, it's absolutely gorgeous. Right.
Vicky Kellingway is the author of the Banana Skin Flip Flops blog. You can look that up, bananaskinflipflops.com. Soon you'll be able to see her TEDx talk on, you know, streamed on YouTube, and check out her book Comedy of Errors coming out in March. So Vicky, thank you once again.
Thank you, and please come to the book fair. It's going to be a fantastic event.
And I know it will. So I've been Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network. Thank you for listening. Keep listening, and we'll be back next week.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.